What's up, guys? Welcome to Instagram Marketing Secrets, episode 112. Today, we are doing the recap episode of the interview with Peter Prue, e-commerce expert, and it was such an awesome interview. I got so much information that I needed to know, so that's kind of why I have some of these big name people on. I really got to see what they're doing, and he was nothing short of adding a ton of value. In today's episode, we're really going to be dissecting the concept of whoever can spend the most to acquire a customer wins. That's probably a phrase that you've heard by now in marketing. And I know the first time that I heard it, I thought it meant whichever company has the most money wins. But what it really means is the companies that can spend $10 and still profitably acquire a customer versus the ones that can only spend $5 are the ones that are going to be able to scale their ads, to really make it work. And the way that we are able to sell more to each customer is actually not in pricier products. It's in having a more complex backend system, subscription services, upsells, things like that. So we're going to be talking about some next level stuff in today's podcast. I'm going to be giving you guys the eight things that I found to be eight tests for whether an e-commerce product is going to have massive scalability potential. You don't have to pass all eight of these tests, but at least a few of them, and I'll elaborate on all of them, of course. But if you can find a product that meets these eight criteria, from my experience, this is what I found to be the things that really separate the seven-figure e-commerce brands from really the five-figure e-commerce brands. But I do have an awesome thing to tell you guys about, because I actually got some gifts made of me so that when people do stories on Instagram, that I am publicly available as a GIF. Now, I have not gotten approved to be public yet, but the GIFs are made and they're looking awesome. And I got it done from our recommended business resource of the week, IG Story Strategy. So if you want to see a sample of it, go there real quick, like pull out your phone. I'm going to give you a second. This is really funny. Pull out your phone, go to IG Story Strategy, the Instagram page, and you'll see one of the recent posts, most likely, if you're listening to this like on the week or two that it comes out. You should see me and a gift there. And that is one of the five gifts that I've made so far. And I plan to make some more too. And some of them are more like IGM secrets related. They're not me just doing a bunch of weird faces. But yeah, I think it's pretty funny how it turned out. I mean, I'm my biggest critic. So at the same time, once I got it done, I was still like, wait, I want to redo it. But it did take me enough takes that I was like, fuck it. Like, that's the one I'm using. So I am doing that like whoa face. If you're like on the image now and you're watching it, if you've ever seen like that Will Smith gif, I did kind of do it with that in mind, because I was thinking, how can I get my gift to be found by the public easily. And I think a lot of people research for that Will Smith gift there. So I did tags on it for like Will Smith. So hopefully I'll be able to rank on it and just be like next to that one. And some people will choose to use my whoa face. You know me, I'm just trying to innovate out here. I have no idea if that will actually work, but that was my thought process behind it, just to be honest. But it's really awesome to get these gifts made because they appear publicly on Instagram as well as TikTok, and you can use them, and any of your followers can use them as well. And stay tuned for once they're all published, because I'll actually explain the psychology behind all of the reasons why I chose the gifts that I did, and maybe that will give you some ideas for how you can do it. But if you do like the idea of getting these gifts made for yourself, then go no further than that page that you're already on, IG Story Strategy. The guy's name is Marty, and he is awesome to work with, super quick on upholding his end of the job. I always felt like it was like my turn to send him the next thing. He would instantly crank out the gifts, and he's very quick working through the process. And he's got a special going on for listeners of the show. If you want five gifts made for yourself, rather than spending about $550, he's doing it for $430 for podcast guests. Just DM him and message that you came from this show. He'll help you make them public. He'll get the brand account created, and he'll make five gifts of whatever you want, with animations, everything complete. completely customizable to your business. So that's five gifts for $430, if that would be an awesome move for your business to make. And I think it would be, especially if you're a personal brand and you can really start thinking out of the box here. I think there's a lot of potential for it. So I'm excited to show you the other gifts that I've come out with so you can judge me to see if you think that they're going to work for me and play out and be profitable for me. But you know, that's what I'm all about, is trying to try different things and see what I can make work. So here's another one, and pleased to have Marty be this week's business resource of the week. So let's get into the episode, guys. Let's cut the music and let's do this. All right, so we are going to go over seven things that you can test to see if your e-commerce product is really going to have a large ability to scale. And of course, there are plenty of exceptions that might not meet any of this criteria, that is still such a desirable product with healthy margins that you're able to scale it to the moon, right? Especially if it's a product that appeals to a ton of people. But most of the time, especially when you are choosing a niche and not like huge markets nowadays, you have to have certain things that are, you know, certain features about your product that allow it for you to be able to scale your offers a lot more. So let me go over the seven things that I've found are really necessary to be able to scale a product. So the first one is just, the first two actually are both about the market size, okay? Just like I said right there, it's a very popular thing to pick a niche and sell within that niche. However, the bad part about picking a niche is that we can pick ones that are too small sometimes. And it's not that big of a deal to say, yeah, this is a bigger market, I'm going to try to play in that with e-commerce, okay? If you're a coach or something, then and you need like 10 clients a month, you should niche down so much. When you're in e-commerce and you're trying to sell, you know, thousands of products a month, then it's hard to do it within a small niche. So to test if your market is big enough, the Instagram way, of course, and this is the way I'm going to tell you to do it, but there are so many other ways to test things about your market. But what I would tell you to do is see if the biggest page in your market has at least 1 million followers. And hopefully there are a couple of them too. If there's not, like the biggest page in your market is like 100K, it's very hard to really scale in that business because you would have to be the new biggest account in your market to ever get above 100K. Like if the biggest account is 70K and if the biggest accounts are over all over a million and you do paid posts with them, you have such a high potential to grow your account to a few hundred thousand, so much easier than accounts that don't have the leverage of doing paid posts in your market, or at least forming some kind of collaboration with these bigger, you know, influencers or content pages in your industry. So I would say that there's at least one page that has a million followers is a good way to check on Instagram. The second thing is another way to test on Instagram. I would make sure that the biggest tags in the market are over 2 million. So there should be at least 2 to 3 of the major hashtags in your market that are over 2 million. So let's say you're trying to get into the Frisbee golf market. Then you would just go to hashtag Frisbee golf and see, does this, like this main hashtag that all of our customers would be using if they're just out and about playing Frisbee golf, they're most likely going to just use hashtag Frisbee golf. So unless we see at least 2 or 3 million from our main one, and probably more like 10 million from the top tag, then it's going to be too small of a market. Yeah, I'd say that like at least 10 million from the number one biggest tag in your market. And then you would want to see a few tags that are at least 2 or 3 million. So in like that one, it could be like, you know, Frolf or Frisbee Golf Lifestyle, stuff like that. You should see some of them that would be at least of decent size. Otherwise, like that right there is a reflection of how active your customers are and how willing your customers are to post the experiences that happen in your market on their social feed. I'm going to say that again. It's testing the willingness of the people in your market to post about what they are doing in your market on their social feed. So you're going to have a much more viral nature to your posts, and your customers are going to help you spread the word. Like if you have a good product and these customers are very active about posting about it on their social feed, all of that is going to help you grow your social media presence. So I would look for those two tests as far as Instagram goes. The things that I would ask about the product. So I got five things here that you would ask about if your product can fulfill this capability or not. The first one is, could your product be turned into a subscription model? And this is one that Peter is really known for doing. So he creates things like BarkBox, right? Where people that own dogs buy BarkBox, and then every month they get some new toys, some new treats, various things for their dog. And every single month they're on a subscription and it's just random stuff. They don't even know what they're buying. They just know I'm paying this much money to get dog stuff sent to me every single month. So how great is that? Because then they can just look around and find out what products are actually good deals that month and create their bark boxes off of that, right? And then they can also get these companies that are fulfilling the boxes to maybe even provide free products or extremely discounted products just because of the amount of exposure that they're going to get from being within your subscription box. So is it hard to set up a subscription box? Yes, definitely. You have to get all of the products individually and potentially package them yourself, within your own country, or you're going to have to hire that out, or you're going to have to find a supplier that has every single item that you're looking to sell. There's more to it. But these kind of companies have much bigger potential to scale, and that's what we're really talking about. And if you're trying to build a company that you could have for 10 years or even have a potential to sell, the only way you can build a company for a couple of years and then sell it is if you build it around it being a minimum of a 10 to 20 year company. And the only way to do that is to like truly have the ability to scale on the back end. So is there some kind of, bark box type of thing? Or could you just say, yeah, it's protein powder. You get one a month. And we've got your card on auto charge. It could be this for a lot of things. Any kind of consumable products are very easy to set up on subscription. So on top of that, I would ask yourself, if you do have a consumable product that is able to be set up on a subscription, do you have that option set up? Because if you learn from Amazon, like that is one of the main things they're doing now is just, you save 5% by subscribing to certain products that actually make sense to get over and over. And it's just so much easier that if you're going to spend money on advertising to acquire a customer, rather than spending money to acquire them for every single sale, just spend money to acquire them once. And then on the back end, you just have them set up on a subscription. So that's really what Peter's interview was about. If you really listen to the main point that he was making behind like everything that we were talking about is just you have to have your back end set up properly. If you really want to make money in e-commerce, it's all about your back end offers, your potential for reorders, your potential for these customers to come back and buy for other reasons. And otherwise, it's very hard to really be able to spend that much on your ads. Therefore, you can't really scale your ads if you're just selling these products that are just one-off products. Now, just to talk about that a little bit, because there are still plenty of products out there that aren't going to fit any of the criteria I'm about to tell you today that also have big potential for sales. For instance, let's say it's just a coffee mug, like a white coffee mug, or you sell like packs of four coffee mugs. Where would that be sold? Well, that would be sold on like Amazon FBA. Okay, so
hey, Bar and Grill fans, it's Jim with Madhouse Bar Talk, where me and my co-hosts sit around and talk about the things going on around Madhouse Bar and Grill in Elyria, Ohio. The whole conversation is unscripted, uncensored, and unedited. Anywhere where you stream podcasts, just remember, Madhouse Bar Talks, baby.
When it comes down to choosing, like, should I do Amazon FBA or should I do Facebook ads? it mostly comes down to how does this buyer's process start? Like, if your product is something that they've never seen before, then obviously they're not going to search for it. So you're going to have to run ads that are cleverly designed to stop the scroll and build a lot of value in your product and then instantly get them to buy it right after. Or you're going to have a product that is like, oh, we need more coffee mugs, and they're not looking for a special coffee mug or an engraved one or anything customizable. They're just looking for flat white coffee mugs. So they're not going to wait until they see a Facebook ad. They're just going to go buy them from Amazon. So if you're trying to just buy products from essentially like China or markets where you can get good deals and then bring them over to higher spending markets and just make a little bit of money there, that's always a very simple business model to start. However, the main reason that that is not very scalable is because the ease of competition entering the market and taking your sales. So if I was just buying these four white coffee mugs from China and I did this like 10 years ago and I bought it on Amazon, I would have been doing like $1 million a month, within like the first year or something if I did everything correctly. And then it would just go down and down and down because people would see me selling a bunch of those coffee mugs. They'd go find the supplier. They'd start selling the same ones. And then all of a sudden we're just all in a race to zero, just trying to undercut each other. So those products are great because they're super simple business models. It's just like, oh yeah, I buy this for this much. I list it for this much. And then these are the costs in between. And it's a little bit more straightforward and you don't have to be innovative and invent this new product. You just buy something straight up, but those are very hard to scale because your business probably won't last very long. If you are honestly doing good sales numbers, especially on like Amazon, where people can easily track the amount of sales that are happening on your product through apps like Jungle Scout, which I highly recommend. I'll link it in the description. It's a way that you can see exactly what products are selling on Amazon. There's a $100 version and a $200 version. If you want to be an Amazon FBA seller, I like the $200 version because it gives you like a nice little market analysis on each like page you're on. But otherwise, the $100 version, you can like go to a products page on Amazon and then you can click it and it will tell you what they sold last month and a bunch of other data on it. So if you're looking to just do online arbitrage where you just buy products and then list them for more online, then you'll want that kind of data because you're going to be selling in a place like Amazon. But if you pigeonhole yourself where, oh yeah, our product can really only be sold on Amazon because it's not something, you know, these four coffee mugs, they cost us $7 and we sell them for 14. We can't really spend money on advertising to sell them for $7 or less. Like, there's no possible way you could spend less than $7 to sell those properly on social media, okay? Because people are not looking for coffee mugs and there's no way to target that because you'd be like, people interested in coffee. And it's like everyone. It'd be so hard to do that profitably. I'm going to go out and say impossible if you had a $7 profit margin on just blank white coffee cups. You're just going to have to list on things like eBay, Amazon, or any other website that people would go to just to buy blank basic kitchenware. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to scale in terms of Facebook ads, Instagram ads, YouTube ads, influencer marketing. All of those things are going to be off the table to you. So you'll be limited on scale simply because you'll be limited on the amount of marketing that you'll be able to do profitably to sell your item. So the second thing that I was going to that you should ask yourself about the product is it an emotional buy, even if it's just a little bit? The emotional buy is very important because it's the only way that people really make decision on the spot. And otherwise, it has to make so much damn logical sense. And you have to run a sale and you have to really be like, the sale's ending soon. And they're like, fine, it doesn't really excite me to buy it, but I know I need to buy these four coffee cups eventually anyways. And it's $2 off. I'll get it. There's no really emotion behind them buying it. So like an obvious circumstance would be like a car. Like when someone buys a car, there's a lot of emotion behind it. And they're not just buying it for, oh, good gas mileage. They're buying it for like who they're going to be able to show it to. If they're buying like a really nice car, they definitely have people in mind of who they're going to show it to. Like there's a lot of emotion and ego, even if you will, that is wrapped up into their purchase. And when you have those kind of emotions going on when they are purchasing, it makes it so there is natural urgency to buy your product, which makes it so you don't have to be a completely sales-oriented company. Okay, what I mean by sales-oriented is I mean you don't have to be like, we're running another sale, we're running another sale. Because if your product is really, it doesn't make them feel great about themselves when they buy it, then you have to make so much logical sense with just like the numbers of like, hey, we know it, you don't really need to buy it right now, but you know, 4 water bottles is on sale right now, $3 off, it ends tonight. They're like, fine, I'll buy the water bottles rather than just wait for whenever I was going to buy them, right? But if you have like that emotional sale as part of it, then that really makes it so people just buy it and they're not really concerned about the discount, which is the type of product that you want to sell. So like Apple would be a shining example of this. If they did do a discount every Black Friday, everyone would just wait year round for that and not buy throughout the year. It'd be like a horrible idea, right? Because so many people already know they want to buy it. They don't need like the sale to push them over the edge, because they could be like, oh, is there any sales at Apple? And they'll be like, no, there's not. No, they'll be like, okay, I'll buy anyways. So like products like that don't need to run sales. And you want to be as much like that as you can. So much easier said than done to be like the quality of Apple's product, right? It's pretty much impossible to get to that quality of product without being in business for decades. Having the ability to, people see your item and they say, how much is it? And you say $70, and they say, I'll take one, rather than, ooh, okay, let me know if there's a sale. Then you have a product that can be bought year round. Like every single week, you're going to be getting sales from it, because they're not just like, eh, I only really buy when there's a sale. So when there's the emotional part to it, it also means that you have to be good at marketing it so that you're actually in tune with, or you're good at getting your customers in tune with this emotional side of the purchase. So think about even just like as simple as clothing. If I was running a print on demand business and I was making a shirt, and one of the shirts, let's say I was making it for the Instagram podcast, right? The obvious shirt for me to make is just Instagram Marketing Secrets Podcast. Yeah, just put my logo on it, right? Are you guys going to have any emotion when you buy that? Like, unless you love my podcast so much that you're just trying to wear it out and about and like, oh, family occasions, cool. I'm wearing my Instagram Marketing Secrets podcast. Oh, I'm going out with friends. Yeah, I'm going to wear my IGM Secrets podcast shirt. Like, it would probably just become your bedtime shirt, right? It, like, unless it's the most comfortable shirt in the world, you're not trying to promote my podcast like that. And a lot of people just think they can just throw their brand on something and then print on demand it. And that's what print on demand is. Like, no one cares about your brand at all. Like, it takes decades for people to like care about your brand to the point that they're like, I just want to wear that company's logo. So if we imagine just a shirt, let's say that I could make a shirt that would be, you know, something entrepreneur related. I wouldn't make any shirt like this, but like the things that come to mind would just be, you know, hustle, work hard, like grind, like things like that. I could make some entrepreneur related, like quotes or just something like that that's like fun for you guys to rep. So it wouldn't even be like IGM fam. I wouldn't put that on there. But if there was something on there that made you feel like you were a part of a community, and which is total emotional purchase right there, if it was something that you'd be proud to wear and show people, if it's something that's funny and you're like really excited to wear it to show people how funny it is, all of those things result in people just buying it when they see it. They like it, they buy it, and you really want a product that can fit that criteria. The third thing is, does it have upsell potential? So this kind of goes into the subscription thing, because if yes to the subscription, then it probably has upsell potential too. But you don't have to run it as a subscription model. You can run it through like a funnel. Like, I always build in ClickFunnels. You guys know I'm a huge proponent of ClickFunnels. Even if you have no tech experience, it's so easy to create upsell funnels where someone can buy your product and then on the next page, it offers them some kind of deal, and all they have to do is click one button to upgrade their order. Or if they exit off the page, then it just gives them their original order. So let's just say that on that water bottles example, or the coffee cups example, that someone buys those 4 white coffee cups, and then as soon as they buy, it brings them to the next page and it says, do you want to double your order for, you know, just a little bit more? So like if it was 10 bucks for 4, then they can double their order like 18 bucks to get another 4. That's the next upsell. And they say, no, thank you. And it says, okay, would you like to add the coffee stirrer spoons for $5 for four of them. And they're like, sure. And then they add it on. And then it says, do you want to add coffee itself? Do you want to add a subscription to coffee, right? Like, you can do so many different things with it. And it just has to make sense, the logical order that people would buy them. So like, if you were doing a funnel with upsells for a phone, what would be the thing that you get sold after a phone? You get sold a phone case, right? You get sold screen protectors. That would be like the obvious way to build a funnel around selling a phone. So how would you build a funnel around your product? And the cool thing is when you do it in this funnel style, it allows you to give people a better deal on the front end, which makes it easier to acquire customers and also easier to sell them a lot more. So let's say that you're selling protein powder, and when you just list it on your website, you just have it $40 and someone goes in and buy it. And of course, at the bottom, it says like frequently bought together. And maybe you even have, you know, get a second protein and get like 5% off, something of the sort. Versus you buy the protein, and then on the next step, it tries to upsell you 3. And if you say yes, it tries to upsell you 5. And if you say yes, it tries to upsell pre-workout supplement. And if you say yes, then it maybe tries to sell you one more thing, and then you're done. And if people, like 1 out of 10 people say yes to one of those things, now all of a sudden your average customer, your average cart value is so much higher that now you could say, you know what? Let's just get more people in the funnel. So rather than charging $40 for that protein, let's charge $30 on the front end so we can get more people into it. And now we actually can afford to charge $30 on the front end because of the amount of people that are taking us up on the upsells after. It allows us to have a little bit more room to still spend profitably on the front end. And then you might find now we can sell our product for $10 less and make more money just because we set it up as a funnel with upsells. So rather than, yeah, they buy the protein powder and then hopefully in a month they come back and get it, you know, we're going to give them the opportunity to buy multiple right now. We're going to give them the other supplements that they might need to hit their goals, because we know what they want to do, right? The emotional purchase is not that they want to buy protein. The emotional purchase is that they want to get bigger, to impress someone. They want to get healthier, to stay alive longer for their kids. All of those things. That is why like selling supplements is actually quite the emotional purchase for people, because it is in line with a lifestyle goal of theirs. So that's why it's really easy to keep like upselling and be like, yeah, do you want these pills to help you get more toned? Like, you know, they're all about that. So of course, these are all things that you would sell completely honestly and ethically. Like, you got to sell great products, but this is how you would just package it. So now all of a sudden you can spend more per customer and still be profitable, which is how you beat out your competitors.
Are you interested in small businesses? My name is David C. Barnett, and I've been podcasting and producing YouTube videos about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses for almost 10 years. I'm a former business broker and have owned and operated several businesses, and I've been advising business owners since the 1990s. Each week, I create a new podcast which answers one of your questions, and I've always got amazing, exciting guests. You can find me on YouTube by going to smallbusinessanddealmakingpodcast.com or just search David Barnett Small Business in any podcasting app to find me. I look forward to seeing you around.
The next thing is the customizability factor to it. So this is more like the personalization factor. So something that's really big in e-commerce is, let's say that you do print on demand and you do a bunch of like wall art of dogs. Instead of just doing a bunch of wall art of dogs, you could do custom wall art where people submit a photo of their dog and then you turn it into a custom print of their dog. Now, the reason why, even though that's like much more work, right, is because you can charge much, much more. and it's not going to really affect your profit margin. It's just going to be more time to set that up to use their photo and create it, but it's not that hard in a print-on-demand setting. But then you can create custom photos for people of their dog, and now all of a sudden that's worth $150 to them rather than the $30 painting that was just of some random dog. So if you can add a customizability factor, maybe people can add their name, they can customize the color of the frame, they can engrave it to be as a gift, which is that's my next one. I already blew it. The fifth one is, can it be sold as a gift? But that goes right into the personalization thing, because the two kind of go hand in hand. This just makes it so, like, if I could get you a coffee mug that has like your dog on it, I'm going to be much more likely to get that for you as a Christmas gift than just a coffee mug, right? So it opens up, like, now this purchase makes sense for so many more people. And maybe I get you the dog mug this year, and then next year I say, that went over so well, I'm going to get someone else a dog mug. Okay, it has high reorder potential because there's emotion in the purchase. Because when they open that up and they say, oh man, it's my dog on a mug, they're going to be super emotional and they're going to love it. And then that emotion is going to translate to the giftee or the gifter wanting to do that again, right? They're like, oh, dang, that was awesome. I'm going to gift this more often. The thing is it adds so much value without adding cost. And all we're really talking about here is how to spend more money to acquire customers profitably so that you can like 10x your ad spend and still be profitable. That's something that Peter mentioned, is that one of the rules he follows with marketing is, you know, how can I 10x my ad spend and still be profitable, rather than how can I spend the same amount I'm spending on ads right now and then become slightly more profitable. He's saying, how can I spend more and more and more on ads, which is really what scaling is, right? You're just investing more into the marketing. Unless your product is completely word of mouth, like more sales is just going to be related to increase in marketing. So if it has this personalization factor, you can charge much more, and it's going to really open up the ability for it to be a gift. And it's just a great way to differentiate yourself from other e-commerce brands. The thing that I like about it too is that it just is a higher barrier to entry. So basically all these things that are difficult to do that I mentioned, you need to change your mindset on how you hear them. If you hear like, I don't know how to make like a website where they can personalize the gift and they can, like, it's an emotional sale and there's like upsells, like setting up a subscription, setting up this monthly subscription box. Like, I don't know how to do any of that. It sounds like a lot of work. Unfortunately, those kind of things right there, most people do hear of these opportunities and they say that same thing. But fortunately, most people hear of these opportunities and they do the same thing. They say that's going to be too much work. So with these opportunities that are more work to start, higher barrier to entry, they are a lot safer. It's a lot more difficult for someone to say, you know what, I'm going to start that company too, and then build it from the ground up and do all the work that you did. And that's something that Peter mentioned as well. He's not worried about competitors because he knows the amount of work that he had to put in to make his funnels work, to make his offers work. People are so far behind the amount of work that he's done. And he's been in the online space for, I don't know exactly, but well over 10 years that he's been doing this. And something that he said too is, he said a lot of people, they struggle for their first couple years and then they get into this middle area where they're still like not really fully making it. They're doing okay and they just keep chugging along and keep testing new things. And he said that's the main area that people give up. But if you just keep going and like, as soon as you get one of your offers to work, it will really, click in your mind. It'll make it so you just know what you're doing online. And I was really happy to hear him say that because that's exactly what I told people in my former sales job. We would always go out and try to do these contests where we'd sell $10,000 of product in 2 weeks. And on my fifth attempt ever doing it, I finally was able to do it. It was like I hit it the last day. And then after that, the next 11 times that we had that contest, I sold over 10,000. So as soon as you do it, you really do break a mental barrier as well as just an understanding of how things work. Like, you have finally made all the mistakes that you needed to make before you got this success. And usually from when you're there, like the likelihood that you're going to make another offer work and another one work after that is so much higher. So it was great to hear him say that and support what I've been saying is that there is like a lot of like struggle where you don't know what you're doing at all. Then there's some struggle where you're starting to get a hang of it and you really wish you were just successful already, but you're still not there because it just hasn't fully clicked yet. And then you start just having epiphany after epiphany of like what you need to refine, and you keep doing it and you change ideas. And then finally you strike gold. And once you do that once, it's a lot easier to replicate that into other businesses. So keep your head up in the early stages. The more success you get under your belt, the easier it is to replicate. Now, something that I should mention though, because I did say it's safer to build these high barrier entry businesses. And what I mean by that is they're safer long term, because if they work, then they're going to be safer because it's going to be a lot harder for someone to come in and compete with you. And you have all this opportunity for customer reorders, and you have this customer base, and it actually means something for you. But the time that this is not a good idea is when you spend all of this work creating a subscription box, creating a big upsell funnel for an unproven product. So know that there are so many ways that you can test products in e-commerce that you should never be investing a significant amount of time into building out a complex online sales process with all this email automation and stuff like that until you've gotten confirmation that this will work. Okay, so the ways that you can do this, Peter mentioned the way that he likes to test products through either affiliate marketing or drop shipping before bringing it into a private labeling or like an Amazon FBA model where you're buying a bunch of inventory. Don't start by buying a bunch of inventory and hoping it sells. Try to sell it through a drop shipping or affiliate marketing setting before buying all this inventory. The other way that I love to do it is that I love to run a giveaway for a product, even if I'm testing to see if I want to come out with that product. So if you guys have ever seen one of my newer webinars, I'll link it in the description if you want to see. It's on how I was able to run a giveaway for a product that we were considering offering. And it had never been out in the market before. No one had ever seen it. We had no way to get sales data on it. And the minimum order quantity was we were going to have to spend over $10,000 to buy it. And we weren't even able to drop ship it, actually. They didn't set that up. It was just we either bought $10,000 worth of these unproven products and hope it worked well, or we could figure something else out. So that's what I did. I figured something else out. Basically, we ran a giveaway for this product. We got a ton of people to enter for it. And then I ran a really discounted pre-order for it. And then we raised the funds through the pre-order to buy the product. And if I wasn't able to raise the funds, or at least a significant amount of them, then I would know that this product isn't worth coming out with. And then I would just try to get one and supply the giveaway winner with the one that we gave away. But I really like to do giveaways for products that are proven to either to build a following and increase the sales for it. Or I like to run a giveaway for products that are totally unproven. And then I do it in a pre-order fashion, because unless they're willing to actually spend money on it, I'm not going to rely on any survey data out there. And that's something that I really want to promote to you, is that if you think getting survey data is testing whether your e-commerce product works or not, you're gonna run into a lot of struggles when you actually try to sell it, because a lot of those people who say they would buy it in a survey don't actually buy it as soon as money becomes involved. So you want to be able to actually sell your product before knowing that you have product validation. So the ways to do that, I like to do a giveaway and then run a pre-order at the end. Some people just, if you are able to drop ship it or affiliate market it, then you can just run ads directly to it and just see if you can get some people to bite and see if you see some scalability potential when you order like a ton of quantity in it. But if you want to see like my exact story of, you know, how I was able to raise all this money to then purchase our inventory through pre-order sales, and we gained a few thousand followers in the process of running this giveaway too. That is my favorite way to get conclusive data whether your product is going to work or not. And it's much better to spend some money on some advertising for a couple weeks to figure out if a product is going to work or not, than to not spend money on advertising and getting the word out there about it and just starting it. And then just like eventually setting up all of this stuff on your website, and building out a whole backend process just to find it's not going to sell well. The biggest issue that you'd have with these models that I'm talking about is just if it doesn't work. So make sure that you only build out these complex sales models with products that have been proven through a more simple sales formula. So go click the link in my description and watch the giveaway training on how to do that, because that is truly what I found to be the best way to test products, and you build a really large following in the process, and that never hurts, right? Especially because it's a super targeted following. So guys, that would be the main points that I took from Peter's interview. I really loved it, and I was super stoked to have him on because I've been following him for so long. And there's only a handful of people that I have on the show that I truly do want to have on again, and he is one of them. So DM me if you feel the same and let me know some of your takeaways. If there's some other questions you have as far as e-commerce goes, definitely shoot me a DM too at IGM Secrets and let me know. But I got more episodes coming at you, and I've got a big surprise coming to you guys in the next couple weeks here. So stay tuned for that. I can't wait to debut it, and I'm keeping my mouth shut for now, but I am very excited to show you what I got for you in the next couple weeks. Have a good one.